The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we'll start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, Future of Franklin Street. To lure more businesses, Chapel Hill shifts focus on its core corridor. And the article begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with a second headline, From Baby Blue to Business Green. Chapel Hill is a quintessential college town, but changes in patterns have made that a challenge. And this is written by Kaylee Thompson. Mandy Brown, owner of Ragaroo Imbibe in Chapel Hill, gets phone calls every day from would-be customers telling her they would have come for dinner but can't anymore. The reason? The construction and parking is so terrible, she says. She can't begin to fix or even address the issues, though she certainly has tried, offering free delivery on orders within a block and posting menus at local bars that don't offer food. None of it has changed how many customers the restaurant serves each day. That's left her to navigate staying afloat 1 month at a time while hoping the downtown economy bounces back. We are always promised every time there is a development, you're going to have so much more business, and none of us ever really feel anything from that. Ever, Brown says. When I realize that it doesn't affect me positively as far as having more business once these things are open, I don't really expect it to boost me. Brown has been in the heart of Chapel Hill just across from the University of North Carolina campus at a location on Henderson Street between Franklin and Rosemary Streets for 13 years, and she is determined to remain open with the promise of new development and the foot traffic it could bring. Like so many downtowns, the Franklin Street corridor in Chapel Hill has been plagued with a number of issues since COVID, but despite its high profile, it faces the additional challenge of still being a nine-month economy due to how Carolina's campus and the downtown environment blur lines with each other on Franklin Street. For decades, the town has catered to the students and university, and while that made Chapel Hill one of the best college towns in America, it's not working anymore as businesses there face more on-campus offerings, the increased usage of food delivery platforms, high lease rates, lack of parking, and safety issues. Signs of the stress are obvious, with empty storefronts at the corner of Franklin and Columbia Streets, the recent closing of Linda's Bar and Grill, and the still-empty former home of Ye Olde Waffle Shop. But in recent years, a town once known for being stubborn about development and change is looking to revitalize downtown and switch to a 12-month economy. The town has worked to bring developments that will establish more people downtown on a regular basis. This strategy could also address some of the safety concerns people have expressed about walking downtown, particularly after dark. The town is shifting its downtown core from being solely focused on students to a model more tailored to professionals, dubbing it the Innovation District, hence its partnership with UNC on the Innovation Hub and Grub Properties of Charlotte on a life sciences center and professional apartments. Farther down Franklin Street, Longfellow Real Estate Partners is working on a new life sciences building. Students just aren't coming downtown, so I think the businesses need to adapt. If they are strictly focused on students or their livelihood is, they need to pivot in some capacity to more deliveries or reaching out to a different community to get different things in, says Jerry Lynn Schulke, executive director of the Downtown Chapel Hill Partnership. It's difficult because we are right next door to campus, and it's hard for businesses to see that it is changing. Franklin Street flagging. The changes occurring on Franklin Street are evident as there are fewer people walking around than before COVID. A Friday evening should yield packed sidewalks and crowded restaurants, but unless there is a major sporting event, the sidewalks have plenty of room and restaurants are half empty. Of those who are downtown, not many are college students. That's partially because students have more attractive food offerings on campus than ever before. Schulke says there used to be droves of students coming downtown because the food and beverage options on Franklin Street were far better than what they had on campus. But now, with the ability to use DoorDash or Uber Eats, students don't have to leave their residence hall. Students' habits have changed, and the radius in which they're willing to go places has gotten smaller. On the west end of Franklin Street, business owners have told Schulke they don't see students at all anymore. The lack of students has hurt several businesses, but it isn't the only factor causing restaurants to shut down. High rents and people wanting to be able to park within a block of where they're going to going to have been hurdles to overcome as well. Aaron Nelson, president and CEO of the Chamber for a Greater Chapel Hill Carborough, says the perceived lack of parking and businesses having to pay a high lease rate are some of the biggest factors in whether places shutter. Parking is very important to businesses, both that there is parking and that they believe there is parking. Because when there is parking, people don't think so, they don't come. Nelson says, we have habits. You'll go to South Point Mall and you're willing to park 20 minutes from the stores you're going to, but downtown, you don't want to park 20 minutes. It's a perception thing. There are approximately 5,000 parking spaces spread throughout downtown Chapel Hill, including 1,177 managed by the town, according to data from the town. The new parking deck, being constructed at 125 East Rosemary Street, will add 700 public spaces when it opens in May. But the Wallace parking deck on Rosemary Street, which has 309 spots, will be demolished to allow for the development of Grubb Properties' seven-story life sciences building. The building will have two levels of parking, bringing back between 150 to 170 spaces. While the parking issue may not be as bad as some think it is, the leasing rates for spaces downtown have hit new highs. Listed retail leasing rates can range from $25 per square foot to $38, according to LoopNet. Nelson says the math used to work for businesses before COVID, but it doesn't anymore as owners balance paying higher leasing rates while trying to pay a higher wage for employees. That has led to businesses finding ways to cut costs like reducing hours and staff. Coulter DeBrie, owner of True Deli and Bar, says he had to fully move to an online ordering system after COVID. While thought to be temporary during quarantine, it turned into a permanent business model for DeBrie so he could keep labor costs low and make ends meet. True's customer base is mostly students. The numbers just don't add up. We run with one or two staff most of the time. If everybody is doing individual orders, we wouldn't be able to do it with the labor costs and staff that we need. So we've kept this sadly impersonal ordering system, but at this point with downtown Chapel Hill, where it's at in terms of customer visitation, we just can't do it otherwise, DeBrie says. Another piece to the struggling downtown is safety, especially after dark. Panhandlers can become aggressive and even threatening. Both Brown and DeBrie say they've been cussed at, followed, and threatened while walking on East Franklin Street, particularly in the 100 and 200 block. Chapel Hill police have made more than 150 arrests in the past year in downtown, according to police records. Charges range from threats made to larceny to drug possession to trespassing and assault. Brown says she has been followed and faced threats of murder and rape, and that for many, especially women, it doesn't feel safe to be walking alone after 8 p.m. in downtown. Nelson says the presence of more people downtown, brought on by the offices, life sciences spaces, new apartments, and hotels, will help solve many of these issues, particularly involving safety. Development boon. That increased foot traffic is what the town is hoping to bring with its Innovation District. The district was kickstarted by a partnership with UNC, creating the Innovation Hub at 136 East Rosemary Street and 137 East Franklin Street. The hub opened in September 2023 after Grubb Properties redeveloped what was known as the Bank of America building. The hub, named Innovate Carolina Junction, is a seven-story building with 118,000 square feet of office and co-working space for startups and existing ventures that serves as the anchor to the Innovation District. UNC will have 20,000 square feet spread between two floors for its Innovate and Launch programs. Cheryl Waddell, Director of Economic Development and Innovation Hubs at UNC, says the building and programming is part of an ongoing effort to help UNC startups stay in Chapel Hill. Many times, ventures that come out of the university relocate to Research Triangle Park or Durham because there isn't any proper space for them in Chapel Hill. If we can have a faculty member or a student that's working on innovation and creates a company, and if we can keep those companies here in Chapel Hill, we're, one, helping the economy, we're, two, providing opportunities for jobs for our students to work at those startup companies, Waddell says. Innovate Carolina Junction currently has 98 co-working members that represent 35 companies, according to Waddell. On the university side of Franklin Street, UNC plans to redevelop Porthole Alley and bring the admissions office and the visitor center right up to Franklin Street. Waddell says that is at least 5 years out from happening. In addition to the Innovate Carolina Junction, Grubb Properties will develop a 240,000-square-foot life sciences building at 150 East Rosemary Street with wet lab space that will have workspaces and equipment for researchers and biotechs. The development timeline on that is uncertain. Will Parton, Vice President of Commercial Development for Grubb, says that because of the current financial market and the high interest rates, the company can't commit to a start date for construction. Grubb is hoping the second half of 2024 will yield a more positive financial environment that will lend itself to moving forward. Another life sciences development, which could also be held up by the financial market, is planned for 306 West Franklin Street. Longfellow Real Estate Partners wants to build an 8-story lab, office, and retail building spanning 350,000 square feet. Longfellow jumped at the chance to develop a life sciences building that will have space for UNC startups. We see it all the time where it's a UNC product. They spin out, they try to grow their business, and they have to go to Durham or they have to go to RTP because there's just physically not that wet lab space and that infrastructure for them to be able to grow their business. They want to stay local. They love it there, says Casey Angle, Longfellow's Director of Communications. And this gives them that ability to be able to grow it in a really substantial way locally. The uptick in life sciences development in downtown Chapel Hill shows an indication that the town wants to move toward a more life sciences and tech hub rather than a retail-based downtown. While the retail and desire to serve students will remain, the developments will bring in a different kind of customer base. Both our housing strategy and our workforce strategy needed to align to come together to support a year-round thriving downtown, says Karen Stegman, Mayor Pro Tem and council member. When we were first looking at Grubb's life sciences building, data was shared with us about for each new worker downtown, how much they, on average, spend, and it's hugely significant. Trying to bring those two strategies together, has been really critical for us around the housing and the jobs to support downtown. Grubb Properties is also planning a 7-story apartment building from its Link Apartments brand. There will be 150 luxury units at 101 East Rosemary Street. The company is also waiting to start on those to see if costs will lower and it will be easier financially to get started. It doesn't have an estimated start date for the apartments. The other development planned for downtown is a 7-story Element Hotel by Marriott. It would be at 108 West Rosemary Street and have 150 rooms. There is no estimated timeline for when that would start construction. Shulkey says this is what is going to be tough for downtown and the businesses, the time it takes to wait for this development to occur. And right now it looks like the full development of the planned project will take 5 to 7 years until full build-out. Waddell says COVID and the commercial real estate financial market tightening pushed the downtown development timeline back about 2 years. It's a long game. It's going to be hard these next few years. Change is hard. I feel for them, the businesses who are struggling in the immediate, just the ecosystem has changed and it's going to keep changing, Shulkey says. There will be more openings. It's a cyclical thing. Some may close, but some may open. It's going to be a painful couple of years. Uncertain markets. The amount of time it will take to complete development combined with more construction and street closures means more businesses could close, and right now the massive development plans hinge on whether the financial markets will turn around. The Downtown Chapel Hill Partnership is working to ensure business owners know they can go to the partnership for support and help. The partnership is partially funded by UNC, which has invested $150,000 annually, according to Waddell. Those funds go toward programming and marketing for downtown Chapel Hill businesses. The partnership also helps promote, organize, and provide resources for struggling businesses, provided the owner comes to the partnership before it's too late. Shulkey says the partnership will continue to provide this and hopefully more as the downtown economy waits for slated developments to turn the corridor around. Stegman says the shift in the town council from not approving to approving developments for downtown occurred because the members started taking seriously the data and evidence they were seeing not only nationally but locally. The housing shortage and affordability issues seem to be the biggest driving factor behind the shift. That housing shortage has brought about the missing middle allowances and now the upcoming apartments in downtown. Stegman says the council is looking at bringing more housing along with providing small grants to support local businesses and minority-owned businesses. The partnership between the town and UNC will be key moving forward as the university owns several properties downtown. Given that, it's likely downtown will see more developments that are a collaboration between the town and the university in order to create a 12-month economy. That push for a year-round economy isn't going to be easy or a short path. While the town, university, and developers believe this plan is going to be what revives downtown, it's a long-term strategy that took a punishing blow from COVID. If costs continue to rise and rates aren't cut, it's probable that it will be much longer before downtown sees an increase in foot traffic. But anyway, it is detrimental for some businesses. I do not think that I have to close soon, Brown says. If at the end of the construction it does not bounce back and people keep this mindset that downtown sucks and they're never going to go downtown, then no, we're not going to survive. And now we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle Happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Dreams of music, grapes, and more. A multi-phased farm that has long been the passion of a Chapel Hill venture capitalist plans to raise its profile with a new amphitheater this summer. Union Grove Farm, located about 15 minutes outside of Chapel Hill, is creating a venue that can potentially seat more than 2,000 people and will be adjacent to a new distillery. Greg Bolin, a fifth-generation farmer who worked on Wall Street, began Union Grove Farm in 2002. He now has 1,100 acres and is passionate about regenerative agriculture, which removes carbon from the atmosphere and promotes healthy soil. That approach is at the core of his plans for developing a seedless muscatine grape, says managing director Philip Cave, who joined the project in September. Muscatine grapes are remarkably healthy, and Cave believes the grape and the regenerative agricultural practices can be replicated across the Southeast. Why not let North Carolina be an epicenter for regenerative agriculture and potentially export the grapes, he says. His idea is we've got a captured product there that no one else has. The goal is to make the location a destination, which is where the amphitheater, distillery, and beer garden come into play. Cave says Union Grove Farm is negotiating with Atlanta's New Realm Brewing Company, which has run similar venues in Atlanta, Virginia Beach, Virginia, Auburn, Alabama, and Charleston, South Carolina. Cave says the rolling hills and natural boulders create a venue with a Red Rocks feel in the pastoral hills of Orange County and overlooking 150 acres of vineyards. Yes, it's a monumental task, he says, of pulling it all together, but they came to Chapel Hill for a reason. You swear you're in Napa or Sonoma when you're out here. Investors jump in on Midtown Raleigh's future. The Midtown area of Raleigh is quickly becoming another hot growth area, especially after the city adopted a growth plan. The Walkable Midtown Plan identifies projects that will create a more walkable area and addresses certain infrastructure needs. Part of those plans is creating a pedestrian bridge across the Beltline and other walkways connecting the surrounding neighborhoods to the major destinations in downtown, such as the Exchange Development and Duke Raleigh Hospital. Eventually, the city will connect St. Albans Drive to Benson Drive, which is what spurred commercial real estate investor Greg Medin and his wife to purchase a 4,100-square-foot office building at 3720 Benson Drive. Airlines bet on coastal airports in North Carolina. Major airlines are seeing opportunity on the coast, where more and more people are visiting and also choosing to settle in North Carolina. United Airlines is launching a flight between Wilmington and Chicago starting in May. The flights will run on Saturdays and Sundays this summer through mid-August. Meanwhile, American Airlines plans to start daily flights between Wilmington and Miami International Airport starting on June 5. American started the flight last summer with Saturday-only service. In New Bern, Breeze Airways plans to bring multiple flights to Coastal Carolina Regional Airport, which aims to wrap up a terminal expansion project this summer. Beginning in May, flights will head to Orlando, Florida, and Hartford, Connecticut. A gene therapy firm plans to expand in the Triangle. While other projects in the space face delays, a biomanufacturing company is expanding its footprint in Research Triangle Park. National Resilience of San Diego established itself in North Carolina in 2021 with its acquisition of a biomanufacturing facility from the gene therapy firm Bluebird Bio. National Resilience paid about $110 million for the 125,000-square-foot site. The site is mainly focused on gene therapy medicines, but Resilience says it has about 45,000 square feet available for expansion. This space will house equipment that will support vial and prefilled syringe manufacturing. This comes amid soaring demands and shortages of injectable weight loss drugs like Wegovy and Zepbound. UNC looks at Smith Center options. Dean Smith once told the story of how he went fundraising with Skipper Bowles for the new basketball arena. A donor asked how much he should give, and Smith said $10,000 would be fine. Bowles was aghast and politely said this donor could give far more. UNC's donors stepped up, and the $33.8 million Smith Center opened in 1986, but like the Charlotte Coliseum, 1988, it lacked amenities. Now, Inside Carolina reports a UNC group is studying options. Athletics Director Bubba Cunningham says, "Some of the amenities and services that you'd like to provide an elite program, we just can't do that right now." Board of Trustees Chair John Pryor notes that cost is a challenge, but you can't completely rule out a new facility in a new location. So Carolina could soon be fundraising again and needing a leader like Bowles. Despite ALS, he raised the money and entered the Smith Center opener in a wheelchair. He died later that year, leaving behind an arena that didn't bear his name but did bear his fingerprints. And finally, Epic Games leads list of complaints. The Better Business Bureau serving Eastern Carolinas has released a list of the top 10 businesses in its 48-county service area with the most unanswered complaints in 2023. Nine of those businesses are in the Triangle, but one carry company towers above them all. Topping the list is Epic Games, with 177 unanswered complaints filed against it in 2023, according to the BBB, 141 more than the second-place company on the list. Durham's Tiara Beauty Company was next with 36 unanswered complaints from 2023, followed by Hillsborough's Adam and Eve, a mail order distributor of adult products and sex education resources, with 23. BBB says it closed 13,125 consumer complaints against businesses throughout its entire service area last year. And now we turn to the top news stories in the Triangle Business Journal. The first one's written by Zach Ezone. UNC searches for land, funds for $3 billion children's hospital. UNC Health is in the early stages of planning to build a state-of-the-art multi-billion dollar children's hospital in the Triangle. It's a years-long project that requires hundreds of acres and that could become one of the largest economic development projects in the area's history. North Carolina is one of the largest states in the U.S. without a freestanding children's hospital, putting limitations on the availability of care and pushing families to seek care outside of the state. UNC Health is aiming to change that with a $2 billion to $3 billion investment in a new facility that could serve the entire Southeast. Depending on the timing for site selection, construction could begin in about 2 years and take up to 6 years to complete. Construction would support about 3,000 jobs. When it opens, the hospital could employ 4,000 to 6,000 people. UNC Health recently formed a new leadership team solely dedicated to advancing what UNC officials say will be an 8 to 10-year project. Andy Willis is leading this effort as the Executive Chief Planning and Development Officer for UNC Health. UNC Health envisions a facility between 500 to 600 beds, Willis says. The hospital would serve as the focal point of a children's healthcare campus that could also include medical office buildings, outpatient facilities, and research operations. The health system is searching for between 200 to 300 acres for the campus and expects the project to cost at least $2 billion, which includes an initial $320 million investment that UNC Health received last year from the state budget. UNC is launching a fundraising effort for the project. The health system could look at issuing debt or other financing strategies to cover some of the funding needs, Willis says. The state is going to be a partner in this, but we think it's important enough that we're philanthropically going to try to raise the rest of the money and figure out how to finance what will be a $2 billion to $3 billion project, Willis says. There are nine children's hospitals in North Carolina, but they are all embedded in adult hospitals, Willis says. Sports venue gets capital jolt. Raleigh funnels $10 million to huge tennis pickleball facility in Briar Creek. This is written by Laura Brumette. The city of Raleigh is putting up $10 million to help fund a huge sports facility planned for Briar Creek. The city is backing Swing, Racket, and Paddle, a facility that will include more than 50 courts across three sports, a restaurant, beach tennis courts, walking trails, and an innovation facility for major sports brand Wilson. The public-private partnership began in 2018 with a lease agreement with Swing for 45 acres of city-owned land. The city council on February 20 voted unanimously to authorize the city manager to execute an economic development agreement with the allocation of $10 million to Swing. Raleigh will be the flagship location for Swing Racket and Paddle, a concept led by tennis player Rob Autry and partner Jason DeGroff. The site will also become a home to its headquarters as other locations are developed. Located at 6121 Mount Hermon Road near the Alexander Place Shopping Center, the site is now shovel-ready, according to comments made by the Swing team during the City Council meeting. The team is planning to break ground early this summer. The company estimates it will spend $125.4 million on capital investments and infrastructure to build the facility. Previous estimates had a price tag of $70 million. The city is using excess capital reserve funding for the Swing allocation. The funds will focus on the publicly accessible portions of the project, including trails, parking, play areas, and restrooms. Swing is estimating the facility will host 1 million people annually and generate $360 million in economic impact over a three-year period. Swing expects to employ 82 people full-time and 262 people part-time in Raleigh. The team is aiming to make the Raleigh location an international destination with plans for over 32 tournaments every year and a high-performance tennis academy on-site. The facility will have 25 indoor and outdoor pickleball and paddle courts and 28 indoor, outdoor, and covered tennis courts. There will also be ping-pong tables. The public will have access to park space, walking trails, and restrooms at the facility at no cost. The courts will operate on a pay-to-play basis. Wilson Sporting Goods, the sports equipment company, is planning to move its racket innovation hub from Chicago to the Swing facility. And next is an article written by Kaylee Thompson, Growth Fuels Plan for 300-Space Parking Deck. As downtown Cary attracts more visitors and residents, the need for more parking is growing fast. A public-private partnership is tackling the issue with plans for a large parking deck in the heart of downtown. Northwoods Associates, Chatham Street Commercial, and the Town of Cary are partnering to build a five-level parking deck on East Chatham Street next to New Rogers Building, mixed-use development between Walker and Academy Streets. The addition of nearly 300-space parking deck in the middle of downtown shows just how much and how fast Cary is changing. The parking deck will have two retail spaces fronting Chatham Street, with one of those spaces for a restaurant. Jordan Gusson Hoven, owner of Chatham Street Commercial, says the developers are interested in bringing a soft goods retailer to the second retail space to bring more shopping options to the downtown area. The partnership entails the developers contributing the land, which they own, and the town paying for the construction of the deck. Gusson Hoven declines to disclose the development cost. And now we turn to the reporter pages in the Triangle Business Journal, starting with Lauren Onosorge's page on travel and tech. Raleigh to add more roundabouts, complete street concept will become more prevalent in the city. A complete street is coming to Raleigh, bringing with it a roundabout unlike anything drivers have experienced in the city. The city is finalizing plans to execute a $20 million improvement project for Lake Wheeler Road that will convert the two-lane stretch of pavement into a street designed to accommodate all modes of transportation. Construction is scheduled to start in 2025. The project, targeted for Lake Wheeler Road from South Saunders Street to Maywood Avenue, includes adding a unique peanut-shaped roundabout to slow traffic and raised median to reduce unsafe left-hand turn movements and elevated intersections along side streets to create safer experiences for pedestrians. It also includes the addition of sidewalks, shared paths, and bike-only facilities, all with the goal of implementing better connectivity for all modes of transportation. If that sounds familiar, it should, as the complete street model has become central to Raleigh's street planning efforts in recent years. Essentially, the complete street is trying to design a roadway project that accommodates all modes of transportation, says Lee Mai, a senior project manager with the city. According to advocacy group Smart Growth America, more than 1,700 complete streets policies have been passed in the United States, including those adopted by 35 state governments. Daniel Finley, associate director of the Institute for Transportation Research and Education, says the complete streets concept is a planning process also used by the North Carolina Department of Transportation. As North Carolina doesn't have county roads, Finley says, I think it creates a great opportunity for our state to have a lot of uniformity. The impetus for planners, designers, engineers, it's to critically evaluate any road and say, how can we make this road more complete for all users? Finley says it's not a one-size-fits-all, but that roundabouts can be a common proponent. Just replacing a typical four-way intersection with a roundabout improves safety, both in numbers of crashes and their severity, he says. Much of it comes down to speed, as roundabouts typically cap it at 25 miles per hour. That's everything with safety, Finley says. If you can get people to slow down, you're going to get a better safety performance. RDU sweetens the pot for its board members. As Raleigh-Durham International Airport prepares for the launch of its nonstop flight to Frankfurt, Germany this summer, five board members are packing for their own European adventure. The Raleigh-Durham Airport Authority recently approved travel expenses for five board members to take the inaugural flight, an opportunity for the board to personally convey its appreciation for this significant investment, staff wrote in a memo. The board approved the four-night trip at a budget of up to $5,000 for airfare. Hotel stipends of $1,500 each were approved, as was a per diem of $600 for four nights for each. German airline Lufthansa is investing $175 million to initiate the RDU service, which is expected to have a $3 billion impact on the community if it sticks around for the next 25 years, according to the memo. Miami's loss is RDU's gain on new EV buses. The Raleigh-Durham Airport Authority found a way to save $3 million as it works to decarbonize its fleet by buying Phoenix Motor Cars buses that had been intended for South Florida. The board, which has had some bad luck thanks to the bankruptcy of electric vehicle bus maker Proterra, approved the purchase of six buses from Miami-Dade in Florida at its meeting this month. Miami had purchased 75 EV buses, but could only take on 69 due to funding availability. The buses were to be sold to the first customers who could produce a deposit. All six buses were on sale for $3.9 million. Comparable buses are $1.2 million each, meaning savings for RDU. And now we turn to Zach Ezone's page on healthcare and higher ed. Firm seeks protection under bankruptcy. California's Invitae hope to have big Morrisville presence. Less than 3 years after announcing plans for a large expansion in Morrisville, a California company focused on genetic testing has filed for bankruptcy. Invitae, on February 13, filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection as it pursues a sale of its business. The move follows months of layoffs and divestments of business units as Invitae tried to improve its cash position. While these initiatives helped with cash flow, the company's debt remains a problem, CEO Ken Knight said in a statement. Invitae, in its filing in U.S. Bankruptcy Court in New Jersey, listed total assets of $535 million and total debts at around $1.62 billion. Invitae's debt problems are tied to a streak of rapid acquisition activity, with the company completing 13 deals between 2019 and 2021. These transactions required large sums of capital and increased operating expenses. Invitae funded these deals by adding significant debt to its balance sheet, increasing its debt obligations by about $1.5 billion, according to court filings. Invitae in April 2021 announced plans for a new testing and laboratory facility in Morrisville. The company later that year signed a lease for all 245,159 square feet of office, research, and lab space at a new development called The Stitch, the former site of the Morrisville Outlet Mall off Airport Boulevard Road off Interstate 40. The lease term runs through 2035. But as it grew, Invitae's financial position was hurt by external market conditions, with inflation driving up the cost of materials, labor, and manufacturing. The capital markets tightened and the Federal Reserve raised interest rates, affecting Invitae's ability to raise new capital at a crucial moment for the newly expanded company, according to court filings. Invitae had described the Morrisville expansion as a way to further expand its capacity to meet the growing demand for its genetic testing services. The project represented a nearly $115 million investment that would create 374 jobs over multiple years. The state's Economic Investment Committee approved a job development investment grant for the project, totaling $6.7 million. NC State program aims to turn young companies into big businesses. An initiative at NC State University is launching efforts to help startups in the ag tech and food tech space. The NC Plant Sciences Initiative has formed a program that will help researchers and alumni turn ideas and discoveries into products. The initiative will open an incubator space within the 185,000-square-foot Plant Sciences Building, a $160 million investment that opened on Centennial Campus in 2022. The initiative brings together researchers from various disciplines, such as life sciences and engineering, who are focused on addressing some of the most significant challenges affecting agriculture. A focus on entrepreneurship is part of the initiative's strategic plan, says Kathleen Pitcher, the program's director of innovation partnerships. The starter program is aimed at helping early-stage pre-seed round companies identify and fill gaps in their business. And finally, NC remains a leader in NIH funding. North Carolina last year maintained its place as one of the top states for funding from National Institutes of Health, thanks in large part to research universities and institutes in the Triangle. The NIH, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, awards public and private institutions with funding to drive various research efforts. In 2023, the federal agency awarded Duke University about $701.94 million, the fifth largest recipient of funding in the country, while UNC Chapel Hill ranked number 15 with $559.51 million. And now we turn to Laura Bromet's page on retail and restaurants. Ex-NC State QB turns to pickleball concept. Indoor pickleball golf will come to warehouse space. Pinpoint, a new sports and entertainment concept, is set to open this summer with the largest indoor pickleball and golf facility in the country, according to its owners. Located in warehouse space at 2201 South Wilmington Street, Pinpoint will feature 16 professional pickleball courts, 8 commercial golf simulators, and a chipping and putting area. Pinpoint will lease a 71,000-square-foot space on the second floor of a warehouse building. The build-out for Pinpoint is expected to cost between $1.5 and $2 million. Funding for the project comes from personal funds and a bank loan, co-owner Garrett Leatham says. The venture is owned by a trio of friends, Leatham, Jacob Sterrett, and Dylan Bryan. Leatham and Bryan co-own a property management company at the Coast. Sterrett owns Sterrett Builders General Contracting and has invested in real estate deals alongside Leatham. The team has been working on the Pinpoint concept for about 8 months. Leatham was a quarterback on the NC State University football team in 2013 and 2014, starting as a walk-on and later earning a scholarship spot. The chipping and putting area at Pinpoint will cover around 8,600 square feet. The facility will also have a sports bar, a pro shop, and 2 large rooms available for event and party bookings. Pinpoint will have the capacity to host groups of up to 570 people. The pro shop will carry pickleball and golf gear, equipment, and apparel. The sports bar will serve beer and wine and prepackaged food. Other places in the Triangle offer pickleball, but not on this scale for an indoor facility. Pinpoint is expected to open this summer. The concept is currently in the permitting phase, with construction expected to begin in the next 4 weeks, Leatham says. The business will operate with a membership model, offering 3 types of monthly memberships: pickleball only, golf only, or both pickleball and golf. Drop-ins will be an option at the facility, but members will be the forefront of the business, Leatham says. Tap Room grabs space at new Raleigh Tower. The Brass Tap, a craft beer brand out of Florida, has signed on to open in 400H, the new 20-story tower on Hillsborough Street in downtown Raleigh. 400H features office space, apartment units, public art installations, and retail space. The Brass Tap will take a 33,554-square-foot space on the ground floor, including an outdoor dining area. The chain is known for its extensive beer list. The drink menu includes craft beer, handmade cocktails, and wine. The food menu includes nachos, chicken wings, loaded tater tots, tacos, burgers, and flatbreads. The restaurant and taproom is owned by 2 local franchisees, Roshan Barel and Niraj Bidari. The Brass Tap has over 50 restaurants across 14 states. The Raleigh location will be the brand's first in North Carolina and is expected to open in the fall. And finally, Crawford's Restaurant is on the way. Plans have been filed with the town of Cary for Crawford Brothers Steakhouse, the newest restaurant for Raleigh chef Scott Crawford. The steakhouse was one of the first tenants to sign on to open in Fenton. Crawford announced plans for the restaurant in 2018. Located at 401 Fenton Gateway Drive, the restaurant's building was completed by developer Hines, but remains an empty shell. Plans for the restaurant's build-out are under review by the town. We will begin construction in the next few weeks and open later this year, Crawford says. And now we turn to On Greater Triangle Growth, this page written by Ben Tobin. Japanese firm eyes Sanford expansion. Pharma project could mean $190 million investment, 102 jobs. A $190 million Japanese life sciences project carrying more than 100 jobs may soon be coming to Sanford. According to the Sanford City Council agenda for February 20, an unnamed company in the pharmaceutical research manufacturing will invest over 7 years. The council approved $3.86 million in incentives on February 20 for the development called Project BioBloom. A source close to the matter says the first phase will be on 70 acres at the Helix Innovation Park at the Brickyard, a new industrial park by Helix Ventures that has 885 acres in the northern part of Lee County along U.S. Highway 15501. Helix Ventures, based in Raleigh, has made a major investment in Lee County and is headed by Jay Rapp. The investment will create 102 new full-time jobs with an average wage of at least $91,496, according to the agenda. At least three sources in the triangle say that the company is from Japan. They also added that the state is likely to give incentives to the project following approval of local incentives from the city council. Sanford, a growing city of more than 31,000 residents, has long prided itself on attracting industrial companies through offering ready-to-build land for prospective companies. And the city is no stranger to high-profile projects. In 2019, Indian automotive machining company Kalyani Precision Manufacturing committed to creating 156 jobs and investing $43 million in a high-precision machine shop in Sanford. The same year, Bharat Forge America, a subsidiary of an Indian auto parts firm, committed to building an aluminum forging plant in Sanford, a 304-job, $127.3 million investment. The region has also attracted major biotech investment in recent years. For example, Pfizer operates a gene therapy manufacturing operation in Sanford and has also committed to expanding in the town. Burger chain opens restaurant in Smithfield. A chain of burger restaurants in North Carolina recently expanded in Johnston County. Barley and Burger of Rocky Mount opened a new location at 728 North Brightleaf Boulevard in Smithfield earlier this month, says Travis Ellis, co-owner of the restaurant. We were with Old North State Food Hall since the day they opened, Ellis says of the Selma location. The goal there is to get your feet under you in a new market and to get your product out there. We had an overwhelming response from the local community, and we decided we wanted to search for a bigger space. The new restaurant, a 2,300-square-foot space, has around 10 employees and is a fast casual model where patrons order their food at the front upon entering before taking their seats, according to Ellis. The restaurant seats 30 to 35 people indoors. And finally, home builder pours millions into project. A Morrisville home builder is adding to the housing rush in Harnett County. Garmin Homes has purchased around 30 lots for north of $2.2 million in Greenfield Community's Serenity neighborhood, according to Harnett County deed records. The 550-acre development is south of Fuquay Arena and calls for just under 1,200 homes. It is located northwest of the intersection of Highway 401 and Rawls Church Road. A representative of Garmin Homes did not comment on the development, but the company has been active in the Serenity community, buying dozens of lots over the past few years. And our last reporter page is On Real Estate, written by Kaylee Thompson. New apartments, hotel, linked by pool. The Point becomes next step in Seaboard Station project. A prominent development in downtown Raleigh is getting ready to open its newest addition. Joining Hoffman & Associates Seaboard Station development is The Point, a six-story boutique apartment building with ground floor retail. The Point will be connected to a Hyatt House hotel, also part of the development, via a courtyard and pool. The apartment building will have 75 units set to welcome residents this summer. Residents of The Point will have their own amenities along with access to the hotel amenities, including the pool. John Florian, Executive Vice President of Development for Hoffman & Associates, says the company wanted to provide amenities that created a hotel and resort-style atmosphere. The shared swimming pool is the only one. There is no residents-only pool for the apartment building. However, amenities just for apartment residents include a fitness center, yoga room, co-working lounge, coffee bar, lounge with fireplace, and pet spa. The point costs $34 million and is funded via financial partners and construction financing led by United Bank. The units will be a mix of studio, one and two bedrooms. Pre-leasing for the units will start soon, but the developer is still working on setting the rental rates. Florian says that since the units are boutique and are more like condominiums, the rates will be slightly higher than the units at the Signal, the first apartment complex to open at Seaboard Station. Studios at the Signal start at $1,600 a month. The Signal is a little more than 50% leased. Studio units at the Point will start at 485 square feet, one bedrooms at 613 square feet, and two bedrooms at 1,142 square feet. The interior of the units will feature Spanish quartz countertops, stainless steel appliances, wall ovens, wine fridges, kitchen islands, soft clothes, custom cabinets, ceramic tile backsplash, in-unit washer, and dryers and balconies. In Knightdale, land deal clears way for 375 homes. A developer in North Carolina has spent millions on land in Knightdale that will hold a large residential development. Desco Investment Company, based in Chapel Hill, acquired 102 acres for a little more than $5 million, according to Wake County deed records. The land is set aside for a residential development that's already approved by the town. The development will have 232 single-family homes and 143 townhomes, along with several outdoor amenities. Desco plans to eventually sell the home lots to a national home building company. Named the Preserve at Marks Creek, the property is on the north side of Highway 64 Business, Knightdale Boulevard, not far from Knightdale Station. The company expects to break ground on the lots by April, with a construction timeline of 12 months until lot delivery. And finally, home builder buys project in South Durham. A national home builder has acquired a 576-lot development in East Durham for $125,000 per acre. Meritage Homes paid $23.5 million for 188.25 acres just north of Southern High School on Clayton Road, according to Durham County deed records. The property was sold by Coulter Land Acquisitions of Tampa, Florida, which had it rezoned for a residential development in 2020. Coulter acquired development permits for the property in late 2023 while searching for a home builder to purchase the full site. Meritage Homes declined to comment on its plans. Homes in the area range from the mid-$300,000s to the high-$400,000s, according to Zillow. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook, written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor-in-chief of Triangle Business Journals. Malls, office buildings, valuations plummet in wake. By now, almost all the owners of residential and commercial properties in Wake County have received revaluations of their assets, and many of them may still be scratching their heads wondering about the process behind it all. Wake County's website states, every 4 years, Wake County revalues real estate to ensure all properties are valued and taxed equitably. Real estate revaluations are required by law in North Carolina, and they set the tax value of all residential and commercial land and structures, such as homes, office buildings, stores, and farms. Most of the talk around revaluations has revolved around homes, but I wanted to check the impact on commercial buildings in our county. Knowing that the pandemic has caused a severe disruption to the work schedules of millions in the country, and with several office buildings in the area struggling to fill space, the commercial revaluation was expected to be in direct contrast to the residential revaluation. But most probably don't know the severity of how dramatically the value of these properties has downshifted in just 4 years. For example, Crabtree Valley Mall's value has dropped from $380.5 million to $195 million. Yes, you read that right. Almost a 50% drop. As a result, the mall's tax obligation stands at about $907,000 compared to $2.5 million in 2023, based on the current tax rate. The next significant drop was the Charter Square office building in downtown Raleigh, plummeting 34% in value from $85.6 million to $56.1 million. The value of the Renaissance Hotel in North Hills dropped from $74.4 million to $57 million. And the list goes on and on. To see the top 100 chart, go to trianglebusinessjournal.com. After reviewing the list, I was still stuck on Crabtree's valuation. How on earth can a mall's value decrease by almost 50% when the retail sector has been on fire in the past 2 years. So I called the Wake County Tax Administrator's office. Among a few other things, they said before coming up with the final revaluation number on Crabtree, they checked and compared the valuation slapped on Triangle Town Center, which for the most part in the past decade has been struggling for tenants and shoppers alike. At least in this case, it looks like Crabtree benefited from Triangle Town Center's woes. In all, Wake County stands to lose $5.61 million in taxes from the revaluations of the top 100 commercial properties in the county. Also remember, 31 of the top 100 properties were actually revalued higher, meaning the owners of those buildings will pay a higher tax if tax rates remain the same. County tax officials say $46 million in new tax revenue came in because of the county's economic growth. That money is available for the county to pour into education, health, parks, etc. But if the county wanted another $30 million, tax officials estimate that taxes would need to increase by 1 cent across the board. If the county needs an additional $60 million, taxes must rise by 2 cents. Clearly, this revaluation process has been a story of two tales. Homeowners have a higher valued asset, and commercial building owners mostly have an asset that has been losing value in the past 4 years. As the financial scenario plays out, there is little doubt the county will attract investors ready to pounce and buy properties, some for dimes on the dollar. Add in the current interest rate environment that is killing the refinancing market, and many building owners may be left with no other option, voluntary or involuntary. Of course, the hope is for a minimum impact on taxes when commissioners start the budget negotiations in a couple of months. And now we'll read the big number sections that are sprinkled throughout the Triangle Business Journal. The first one, 967,616. That's how many travelers flew through Raleigh-Durham International Airport in January, 10.5% higher than the same month in 2023. $33 million. That's about how much the Durham firm Brii Biosciences could pay to acquire a drug candidate in development for the hepatitis B virus from VBI Vaccines of Massachusetts. In addition to the drug candidate, Brii is also taking control of VBI's manufacturing facility in Israel. 100,000. That's how many bottles will be made of the Social House Vodka Limited Savage Wolves Edition, a partnership between the Raleigh Vodka Company and an NC State University NIL, name, image, and likeness collective. 10% of proceeds from each bottle will be donated to the collective, benefiting the Wolfpack football team. 295. That's the number of housing units planned for Adams Village, a proposed neighborhood that will be located southeast of downtown Sanford. And our last big number is $6.48 million. That's how much Elmwood Development paid for a little more than half an acre in downtown Raleigh. The Durham developer will build a 12-story building on the site. And now we'll read the quotable sections in the Triangle Business Journal. The first quote is from Trevor Yealy, Chief Commercial Officer at Avalo Airlines, on Avalo expanding at RDU by adding flights to Albany, New York in May. As we've been broadening our Raleigh portfolio, one of the things we've been focused on is unserved opportunities, where we can fly that other people are not flying. If you look up and down the list of unserved markets from Raleigh-Durham, Albany is one of the largest markets sitting out there and available. Next, we have Marcus Burgess, interim president of St. Augustine's University, on the financial challenges the college faces as it tries to preserve its accreditation. The university was hit with a tax lien that shows it owes nearly $8 million to the Internal Revenue Service. Having worked at HBCUs for 20 years, financial problems are, regrettably, part of our DNA. However, our responsibility is to solve problems. And next, we have Carrie Heiss, Designed for Joy Executive Director, on the nonprofit's expansion. The boutique offering goods made by women in crisis will open a second location in North Hills. The hope that we offer at Design for Joy provides a safe space for women coming from difficult circumstances to tap into their inherent value as a person. Next, we have Bob Joyce, former Sanford Area Growth Alliance Economic Development Director, on why he decided to run for Lee County Commissioner. Economic development is a team sport. You've got to get people around and work problems out to land a project. And our last quotable is Nick Bailey, president and CEO of RE/MAX. It was encouraging to see the surge in new listings, as January stats can be a sign of things to come. If new listings continue to emerge and interest rates drop a bit over time, 2024 could be a year of great opportunity for buyers and sellers. And we'll return to the Viewpoints page to read as much as we can of the guest column written by Bill Carter, who is an NIL consultant and an educator. He's the founder of Student Athlete Insights. The headline, "This Could Be a Setback to NIL Progress." I first want to say that I support the rights of student athletes to earn income, and I support universities paying athletes directly. But if we're not careful, I fear it may have a negative impact on the educational opportunities that NIL, name, image, and likeness, has created for athletes. The latest NIL proposal. Last December, NCAA President Charlie Baker announced a proposal to permit colleges and universities to offer athletes more benefits. Among the details of the proposal were to allow schools to be directly involved in name, image, and likeness deals on behalf of athletes, to develop a new subdivision for about 100 of the most well-resourced universities, and compensate their athletes directly. The first two items are controversial, but I see more good than bad. Allowing schools to be involved in NIL deals should create additional oversight. Creating a new subdivision for the richest schools, in practical terms, this is something we already have that we'd be giving a formal name to. But it's that third one, schools compensating athletes directly, that has the potential to have the unintended consequence of undoing some of the good that NIL has accomplished in the last 2.5 years. And we'll stop there, as the rest of the column goes on to mention that paying athletes, student athletes directly, could be a disincentive for them to chase brand-related NIL opportunities. And finally, the Business Pulse survey, the question this week, does your company have an unlimited structure for paid time off? There were 371 responses total. 70% say no. 28% say yes, and 2% say it is being considered. And we'll go ahead and stop right there as we run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. And if you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.